Now, it's really good this afternoon to welcome back Brian Hughes, who I'm sure you know by now, is the consultant solicitor at Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. Now, recently, Brian, you've been spending some time talking about all things related to wills, but you're looking at something totally different today, are you not?
Yes, indeed. Today I'm going to tell you a bit about what most people call their title deeds, but which nowadays are computerised records held by the Land Registry. Most people don't give them much thought, but have you ever wondered why some properties are called freehold, some are called leasehold, or commonhold, and why until land registration really got going in the 19th century, one of the more common types of ownership was copyhold?
Now, OK, Brian, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I've never heard of copyholds or commonholds, but I would guess that most people probably know the difference between freehold and leasehold. Having said that, I've read recently about one or two people who've actually caught a cold, particularly on some new builds. So perhaps you'd like to give us a rundown on all the differences.
Well, until the late 1850s, if you owned a freehold property, it meant you held the land upon which the property was built free of any obligation or payment to the Crown. If you had a leasehold, you had a written permission from the freeholder to occupy the land or a space in the air above it for a certain length of time and on certain terms.
Space in the air? That's a bit odd, isn't it?
Well, if you consider an office in an office block on one of the upper floors, or a flat in an apartment building on the first floor or above as a space in the air, I think you'll see what I'm getting at. The big difference between freehold and leasehold is that one is still an interest in the land itself, and the other is a permission to occupy it or the space above it in a certain way. So you can have a ground floor leasehold flat or maisonette where the freehold is owned by someone else, or a leasehold building where the written permission, called the lease, enables you to sublease part or whole of that building to someone else. Commonhold is a recent attempt to achieve the best of both worlds, but I don't have time to discuss that form of holding property in a short broadcast like this.
OK, now I'm a little bit puzzled by your reference to the 1850s. That's an awful long time ago. What happened then?
Well, believe it or not, it all goes back to the marriage of Queen Victoria and the German Prince Albert, who, although prevented from having any say in the affairs of state, decided to make himself useful in other ways, such as promoting the growth of railways.
Yeah, but OK, what's that got to do with the price of eggs?
Well, Queen Victoria and her aristocratic friends were not too happy, for example, at the prospect of railway lines crossing their land. And incredibly, since the time of William the Conqueror, all monarchs had owned all the land in the country, thereby removing any argument about who owned what. So he pushed for land reform and the end of what appeared to him to be medieval attitudes to land ownership. Technically, the Crown does still own all the land in the country, but prior to Albert's intervention, the king's barons and nobility generally could have large chunks of the country on which to build their castles and their manor houses in return for a fee, or as it was then called, a few, hence the word feudal, like providing money for the royal household or soldiers for the king's military campaigns. Likewise, the church could have land upon which to build their churches and abbeys, provided they looked after the king's or queen's souls and the souls of every Christian in the country. The barons and nobility, in turn, let serfs or villeins, as they were then called, occupy land in return for money or services, and the church were the same, except that they called what you had to pay or do tithes. The nobility kept ledgers showing which serfs or villeins were allowed to occupy land and the amount they had to pay or produce. The ledgers were called manorial court rolls, and the serfs or villeins were later called copyhold tenants. But large areas in many towns and villages did not have to pay anything, and the land within them were called freeholds, and there were deeds showing who the freeholders were, even if most of the time there were no plans. The nobility themselves didn't have to bother about deeds. Everyone knew what they owned, and the whole system by the 1850s was archaic and fragmented.
So what exactly did Albert do?
Well, he could see that although in England and Wales land ownership was a mess, arrangements for land ownership in the empire was much more efficient. So he lobbied behind the scenes for a system of registration of land employed by in the empire to be transposed to the UK. If you wanted to sell or buy land in India, for example, the district surveyor would come out and measure the land and give the buyer and seller plans showing the boundaries of the land. He would register the buyer as owner. Albert wanted to see the same thing happened here. He also wanted to see the obligation to pay the crown or the church for the ownership or use of land to be phased out. As a result, the first Land Registration Act was passed in 1863, 2 years after Albert's death. It wasn't perfect, but it was a good start. Now, you've probably heard that it's still necessary for lawyers to carry out chancel check searches just in case you own a property which has a liability to pay for the repair of your local church. Believe it or not, that liability is just being phased out over 150 years after the first Land Registration Act. The first area tackled by the Land Registry was London, but gradually land registration spread to the entire country. At first it was voluntary, but it's now compulsory. Also, freeholds and leaseholds became registrable estates in land and property. Over the next 80 years from 1860, copyhold tenancies were phased out, as were most tithes. So land registration made it possible for freeholds and leaseholds to be registered and for certificates proving ownership and the dimensions of the land to be issued.
Now, of course, you just mentioned about searches for looking for that you might have responsibility for looking after the church. But I think the other searches they've got to look for is that some things like sometimes you suddenly find that you're supposed to have geese or sheep on the land, well, or you're not allowed to have sheep or geese on the land or something.
Well, there are things like that. You've got to look at your deeds for that. But there are commons as well, don't forget. And there's common land, which has gradually been circumscribed and people's rights over common land have been, reduced over the years. Yeah.
But, I mean, for the most part, the average man in the street going and buying property, what he really wants to do is to avoid leasehold because you could get all sorts of... Isn't that right?
Well, there are lots of leaseholds for 999 years, which is almost the same as a freehold.
Yeah.
These developers up north have been rather crafty and have been selling new houses to people as leaseholds and trying to get a rent out of a new four-bedroom detached house or whatever, and that rent has been is likely to be escalated over a period. Some developers have found themselves in hot water over that, as have some house owners, because these rents that they're trying to shove into these properties can go up to tens of thousands of pounds.
Well, that's right.
And making it very difficult for the person who thought they'd bought a house without any encumbrances to sell it.
And then they can't sell.
They can't sell,
that's
no.
Right. And also I believe that sometimes with these leases, okay, you can buy the lease, and sometimes people say, well, I can't buy it at the moment, so I'll wait for 12 months. And then they find 12 months later the price of the lease to leasehold has gone through the roof.
Well, you've got to be so careful here. There are people scouting around the country buying to buy freeholds, where there are leasehold properties, and charging these leaseholders lots of money. Management companies, for example, now seem to charge the earth. And that's one of the things lawyers get rather upset about, that we have to pay maybe £300-350 to get management information. And, you know, it's sort of half our fees, you know.
And if you're buying a flat, which generally is leasehold, you've also got to watch out that the about the repair cost that you may have to contribute.
Oh, yes.
For that as well, yeah.
Well, on leaseholds, you have a distinct liability to repair things that you occupy, whereas freeholds, you're your own boss,
yes,
and you can either spend money on it or not, on the property or not. In some ways, being obliged to keep a place in repair or contribute to its repair is no bad thing. But my own preference, and I think most people's preference, is for a freehold property where yes. you can do what you want.
Absolutely. Well, look, Brian, I wasn't expecting a history lesson going back to William the Conqueror. Are you keeping to this subject next time? You'll be heading in an entirely different direction.
No, I won't be heading in a different direction, but I'll be bringing you up to date on what you will find on your registered title and what things mean and how they're set out, so that when people have a look at a title, they'll say, ah, yes, I know what that is, and I know what that is, and I know what that is.
Good stuff. All right, we'll look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed, Brian.